This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The Youth Aspiration Manifesto survey was initiated to uncover youth opinions on issues such as employment, housing, education, wealth distribution, healthcare, environment, representation, and also law and order. So the survey was done as part of the Undi Stratos Pratos campaign that was launched earlier this month that aspires to achieve 100% youth voter turnout in elections and ensure youth voices are heard by political parties. So the campaign is a joint collaboration led by Undi 18, Undi Negaraku, and Architects of Diversity. And joining me now is Jason Wee, the co-founder of Architects of Diversity Malaysia, to tell me more about the results of the survey and what this survey is all about. Welcome, Jason. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me, Juliet.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me. So yes, you are no stranger to BFM, of course, Jason. But for the benefit of those who are unfamiliar with the work that you do, maybe you can share a little bit about what Architects of Diversity Malaysia is all about.
Of course. So Architects of Diversity works towards bridging communities and identity groups among youth in Malaysia for justice, peace, and a sustainable future. Our work primarily centers around training youth and increasing their capacity to engage in issues of multiracialism and multi-religious nations, as well as advocating for anti-discrimination, diversity, equity, inclusion. And that's very much, you know, why I'm here. We also conduct research, primarily youth focus on national issues and what do youth really think on a national platform today.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I mean, that's also what I wanted to know, you know. I mean, as I mentioned earlier, the Youth Aspiration Manifesto survey was done as part of the Undi Stratos Pratos. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes, it's Undi Stratos Pratos.
Undi Stratos Pratos campaign, right? And that was, I think, launched just earlier this month in April. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. A few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So Undi Stratos Pratos, you know, it's really a response to the recent kind of passing on the voting age down to 18 years old. Mm-hmm. So what we saw in Johor was that it was the first time that youth between the ages of 18 and 20 could vote in an election. And what we did see, however, is a lot of youth, one, not going out to vote. Yeah. Number two, that the voting process was a bit confusing itself, that the Undi 18 bill wasn't just about the lowering of voting age, but it was also about the automatic voter registration. So a lot of youth thought that they couldn't vote because they weren't registered, although you don't need to register right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of confusion, right?
Of course, yeah. And the third thing is a lot of youth also didn't know that they could vote, especially those between 18 and 20, because there was such a hoo-ha and back and forth between the lowering of the voting age that when it actually came to pass, that information wasn't disseminated. So really, all of this is really the responsibility of EC or Election Commission, right? Where they are, you know, they have the mandate to ensure that the public and the youth in particular are empowered and know how to vote and when to vote. But of course, you know, in this age of information, getting the word out is tough. And so Undi Stratos Pratos has stepped up. So this is collaboration, as mentioned, between ourselves, Undi 18, and Undi Negaraku, to aspirationally achieve 100% youth voter turnout. Mm-hmm. So of course, you know, the GE15, you know, general elections, is probably coming up. You know, all of us are speculating. It could be in 3 months. It could be next year. We don't know when it is. But in order for us to be prepared and in order for youth to be prepared, we need those you know, actions to educate voters, as well as making sure that youth know that they can vote and should vote to go out.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of misinformation that you guys are also trying to battle. Am I correct in saying
that? That's right, yeah. I mean, there's just been so much information. Like, if you've been following news to any extent in the past year, after, you know, Undi 18 launched a lawsuit against the government for a judicial review, and obviously the final ratification in December, that's a difficult timeline to follow, right? So it's very important that the message is very clear now that youth can vote, they don't need to register, and they should go out to vote when the time comes.
Okay. All right. So now that also leads me to this Youth Aspiration Manifesto survey, right? So that's, as I said, done as part of this campaign as well. What would you say is the ultimate purpose of this particular survey? I guess, you know, I mean, what motivated you to carry it out?
Yeah. So I think when people speak about youth voice, there's a lot of fluff oftentimes coming around. What do youth want? Mm. Many different parties would try to claim, no, youth really want this. And other parties would counterclaim with, you know, different outcomes to that. But really, the question is, it's a difficult empirical challenge when youth are diverse. We're not a homogenous group where there are different concerns and demands and, you know, different priorities as well. So the survey for why we did it is to ensure that not only youth concerns, issues and demands for a better Malaysia are taken into consideration when making election manifestos and promises, because that's a very crucial issue. We see political parties and politicians campaigning, especially in the past state elections, with different promises and manifestos at a state level. Right, yeah. And they definitely included some aspect of youth demands, and we've definitely seen this more and more. But how do we make sure that those promises and manifesto items are accurate and actually reflect what youth want? So that's kind of the first thing. Mm. The second thing is it's really an emphasis on not belittling youth in terms of what youth actually care about, because oftentimes people say youth don't care about policy issues. It's a question of which campaign banners are like prettier, or which, you know, this claims that youth are not prepared to vote. Mm. Rather, it's the case that we want to make the claim that youth are prepared, where they actively have opinions about particular issues. So when we ask difficult questions, like the death penalty, ideas of housing, and all these challenges that they are very much confronting, as you know, the world has been very much challenged in the past 2 years since the pandemic. Mm. These are issues that youth have confronted, if not any more than the rest of the country as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, with access to, as you said, you know, so much information, so much knowledge, right? I would say they're far more empowered than I was, you know, at their age at that time, you know, because they just have so much access to information, right?
Yeah. I mean, of course, it's with the immense amount of information, it's incredibly difficult to parse.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I spend like an hour on TikTok a day, and there's just so much information that flows. And even just scrolling through Twitter, we know that there are just immense amount of opinions. And sometimes it's difficult to get a sense of what youth want,
yeah.
Especially when you have a bias where only youth that voice out their opinions are really heard.
Yep.
And so sometimes that might be a skew in our perception about not only just the public, but youth in specific groups. Mm-hmm. So what a survey does, it's really a generalized capacity for us to understand what do youth want on a representational basis.
Yeah, so it's a bit more than a temperature check, but I would say that, right?
That's right.
Yeah, okay, all right. And, you know, back in the intro, I mentioned that the areas the survey covered, right? So why were these, I mean, how did you kind of hone it down to these particular areas, you know? I mean, what were you keen to discover more about with regard to these?
Right, so we covered issues, you know, it's pretty wide. Issues like employment, education, and law and order. One, I think, you know, we needed to cover current issues. And that means it's current issues that have somewhat a policy around it.
Mm.
So, for example, in the case of housing, we know that the Tenancy Act is being discussed in Parliament. We know that for healthcare, for example, there's a lot of changes happening given the pandemic, and there's a lot of issues surrounding that. Second one is that we wanted to also cover areas that have been kind of at a stalemate. For example, in the field of law and order,
mm-hmm.
Where a lot of people haven't really engaged in the topic, or, you know, has been kind of not a priority for many policymakers. But especially so since we have, you know, very current issues that have also touched on these areas, but not so much a policy discussion surrounding that. We wanted to forward that and see where youth are standing on that. The third one is obviously more pressing issues,
mm-hmm.
right? So, for example, and the environment in particular, which we released on the second report.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in December, I think everyone is affected by the floods. I think no matter most people listening to this, if you're in Klang Valley, if you were in the East Coast, these are very real issues. And what are the policy, you know, situations around that? What is really being done? We wanted to field some ideas and see what you think of that.
Okay, all right. And maybe we can just talk a little bit about the survey process itself, right? Just the methodology, I guess, you know, how many people were involved, what sort of age group were they in, those sorts of things.
Right. So we conducted a survey through a survey agency, Base AI, where they use an online representative panel. So that means people who they have sought out in order to represent what is typically Malaysia.
Okay.
So it matches gender, race, age, and geography in terms of the 2020 census. In our sample, we had 3,089 respondents between the ages of 18 to 30 years old. And this is quite important because since it was an online representation panel, I think I'm quite confident to say that it's not answering on Facebook or Twitter. These are actively We see the panel actively seeks out these youth to answer the survey. Mm-hmm. And so there's not so much of a selection bias in that part. So we're also quite confident that through the online method, we can reach youth a lot more accurately in this case versus, say, phone surveys where, I don't know, if I get a random phone call, I honestly don't
not
pick the phone up
that.
These days. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, all right. We'll just go for one quick break, Jason. When we come back, let's find out about some... So you are releasing the results of these surveys in three parts, am I correct?
That's right.
So the first and second have come out. After this quick break, let's talk about the first one and the second one that was just recently released. I'm speaking today to Jason Wee. He's the co-founder of Architects of Diversity Malaysia. We're talking about the Youth Aspiration Manifesto Survey, which was initiated to uncover youth opinions on issues such as employment, law and order, environment, so much more. We'll continue this discussion after this quick break. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Julia Jacobs. Joining me today in the studio is Jason Wee. He's the co-founder of Architects of Diversity Malaysia. We're talking about the Youth Aspiration Manifesto Survey, which was the first and second part of the survey results have been released. And that survey, as Jason explained to us, was initiated to uncover sorts of youth opinions on issues such as employment, housing, education, representation, law and order, so much. And we're going to find out more about the results of those surveys. So as I mentioned before the break, Jason, you released part one earlier this month as well, right? So you're doing it in, I think, in three batches as such, right? Yeah. What were some of the findings that you can share with us from the first survey?
Yeah. So part one, we really focused on socioeconomic issues. So the big one was about obviously employment and housing. So 52% of you feared that they will not be able to find employment in the future. And this concern was, you know, highlighted among Bumiputra respondents specifically as well. And this obviously was related to almost 2/3 of the youth respondents in our survey stating that they fear that they will never be able to own a home in their lifetime. Yeah. And it's, you know, this result that when we released it a couple of weeks ago, it was, we know it's more reinforcing. We know that unemployment has been a huge issue, not only in the country, but more specifically for youth, that we know that the youth unemployment rate has been a lot higher even before the pandemic. And we know that the pandemic has exacerbated this to quite an extent. So, you know, this is a interesting one because I think various parties have tried to address unemployment and socioeconomic standing of youth. And we know that it is a wicked problem. It's not an isolated problem. It has to do with a structural, you know, way that our economy is built and the way that skills are distributed and perhaps is not catching up fast enough. Mm. And so that's been great. And, you know, it's important to continuously highlight this as we don't forget about the actual kind of priority of youth in that regard.
Well, can I just ask, you know, in the survey itself, do you ask them to give reasons why they feel that way, or is it just sort of like they answer it?
Yeah, it's more they answer it. Yeah, but of course, various, you know, on our website as well, that many people have either sent in responses to our Instagram or, you know, answered some questions on our website, that with employment especially, it's a fear because we know that there's a downward pressure on wages that is consistent. And we know that, you know, majority of youth also in from our survey said that they supported the increase of the minimum wage to 1,500 ringgit because we did the survey before that. So it was retrospective. So that's great. But even myself, how do we make sure that our skill sets have some form of capital of value in the future? It's a terrifying thing, right?
It is,
And within the past few decades, we know that the same set of skills have been wildly differentiated in value. For example, engineers, for example, we know have been greatly devalued in our economy. And if you're following the Instagram Malaysian Pay Gap, that's a huge, huge channel. And a shout out to the creator of that has really become a voice for youth concerns in unemployment as well.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sorry, I interrupted you. What were some of the other things that were released?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, of course, you know, we're talking about employment and we're talking about the future. And part of that is through skills and as well as education. And so, you know, we've ran a lot of questions on education before, so you can spin it, you know, a number of ways. But I think something that has been really interesting is the amount of time we're spending on each subject. So we all know we have somewhat of a concern about the quality of our education. Mm-hmm. But what exactly is the quantity of it we want, right?
Sure.
So on the national education system, most respondents actually express neutrality on a matter, where at 38%, 37 to 35% were dissatisfied versus 27% were satisfied with the education system. But however, you know, I think what was interesting for me was the idea of language, because it was pretty consistent throughout all the different subjects, except for the subject of both English instruction and BM instruction, so Bahasa Malaysia. In the sense that non-Bumi Putra respondents were more likely to say that we're spending too much time on Bahasa Melayu and not enough time on English, versus Bumi Putra respondents who were more satisfied with where we are today. That means we're, you know, kind of just enough. So, and I think, I personally think this is quite related to the fact that non-Bumi Putra respondents, specifically Chinese at 44% and Indian at 52%, were more likely to be unsatisfied with the education system. And so I feel like there's a very different sense of urgency and direction in terms of the education system. And we know that the education system is pretty racially split, and this is kind of where AOD's work primarily lies. But there hasn't been, you know, a lot of policy discussion surrounding this. And so, especially for non-Bumi Putra youth, when I feel like this has been a conversation since pretty much forever. This has been a conversation by our parents, and it's continued down to ours right now. How is the government going to adequately address kind of this racially divided view of education?
And we've been seeing, I mean, you were part of our webinar on education as well, isn't it? And yeah, those were the things that we were talking about. How do we use the blueprint, for example? How do we, yeah, how do we move forward, I suppose? But let's move on to the second part of the survey, right? So that one, I think a lot more have been released under this one. Tell me, what are some of the findings that you guys have?
Yeah, for sure. So the first one, that we released a number of dimensions, the first one being law and order, and we released it timely because, well, yesterday we were we witnessed the execution of Nagin Thren, and that was definitely a very sobering moment for many Malaysians, as we saw kind of a cruel execution carried out in a land so foreign to us. And what we wanted to demonstrate was that, and our survey showed, was youth are split on their opinion on the death penalty, where 34% were neutral on the death penalty, and 33% were in support of abolishing the death penalty, whereas only 28% wanted to keep the death penalty. And so obviously, you know, we can drill down a lot more detail into what the questions of mandatory death penalty versus optional usage. But I think the question is here is that there clearly has been a confrontation of youth on the issue of the death penalty with various cases in recent times, especially not only Nagin Thren, but I think also a question of how penalizing do we want to be as a society? But also relating to law and order, it's also this question of punishing speech online. In our survey, we also demonstrated that youth were very scared of posting items online. So 59% of a majority were scared of that they would get in some sort of trouble. But at the same time, 51% of youth still wanted some form of punishment against offensive speech. So I think it's interesting because while at the same time, you know, you're scared of posting things online, you kind of condone that there should be some oversight on what you're posting as well. So it's quite interesting to see this dilemma, right? So is that a trade-off that youth are willing to make? That's definitely a cause for more interrogation as well.
Okay, all right. And I think another thing that you guys were focusing on was the monarchy, am I correct? About insults against the monarchy?
That's right.
Was that part of it?
Yeah. So majority of youth still support that the punishment against offensive remarks against the monarchy. And obviously, you know, I think at least within my little Klang Valley bubble, English-speaking bubble, is that we've witnessed Fahmi Reza being arrested I don't know how many times at this point. I think
he's got like a card going, isn't it? Like,
he does.
Loyalty card.
And I mean, the recent case of Fahmi Reza being arrested for the, you know, Mojo Jojo poster, as well as numerous other cases, I think have definitely informed youth about what kind of speech can be punished in status quo. And so really, it's also an interesting conversation because for many youth who are just out of the education system, when a lot of the education system emphasizes respect for the royalty, how does that reconcile with perhaps a understanding that speech isn't the same as it was before, given that social media has allowed and liberated the capacity to criticize and the capacity to make comments that might go undetected by the government.
Mm-hmm. And I guess also your ability to question authority and things like that as well, right? Where do the boundaries lie?
Exactly.
Okay, all right. Let's move on to environment. As you mentioned earlier, you know, that's a huge part. You said floods in December. I mean, we just had terrible floods in the Klang Valley two days ago, didn't we? What were some of the findings there?
Right. So I think what we found is pretty consistent with previous findings as well, that youth support for environment policies have been high. Okay. Where 75% of the youth surveyed were concerned with climate change in Malaysia. And interestingly enough, 66% were willing to trade off infrastructure development for greater climate protection. I mean, for a big part of it where we are experiencing floods, a lot of experts have come out to say that, look, it's not surprising that we're flooding.
Yeah.
This is very much a clear consequence of the kind of unfettered development that we've had in the past years. Yeah. And so here, at least in our survey, we've demonstrated that 66% of youth are willing to trade off some level of infrastructure development to protect our environment and perhaps maybe pointing to the flood as well. Mm-hmm. And I think this is an interesting one because we know that environmental issues are always at a trade-off with capital development, right? Mm-hmm. So when politicians have kind of two parties to appease, one is obviously the voter base, but also we know that businesses are an important stakeholder in society, and what kinds of licenses and development happens has to do with those relationships as well. Mm-hmm. And so how will the government navigate a clearly more environmentally conscious youth is something to be interested about. Mm-hmm. The survey also demonstrated that 75% of youth supported more punishment for illegal logging. And so that's definitely been a cause of concern for as well.
Mm-hmm. That's really promising to hear. I don't know. I host the show called Earth Matters on BFM, and it's always we're directing it to the youth because we feel they will have the voice, right? And I don't know. These results are really very, very promising to me as well. But let's talk about healthcare now. That was something else that you guys released. Tell me, what were some of the findings there?
Right. So this is kind of encouraging to hear as well, that, you know, healthcare has been center stage since the pandemic. We found that 43% of youth were actually satisfied with the government healthcare system.
Okay.
And this is no surprise. I think the government has demonstrated quite a good competence, and perhaps not even just for government, but also the healthcare workers, the frontliners. I think this number has demonstrated that quite well.
Mm-hmm.
However, 85% of the youth also surveyed mentioned that they want more resources dedicated to mental health. And
okay.
Clearly this is an issue. And we know that with work from home, especially with, you know, MCO happening the past 2 years, we know that mental health issues has been forefront for the younger generations as well.
Mm-hmm.
We know that students who are now slowly graduating into becoming, you know, young working adults have mental health very much as a priority in terms of their life. And so when it comes to access to resources, to managing your own mental health, as well as seeking help when times are tough, that's clearly a cause of concern when perhaps we're not dedicating enough resources to mental health
mm-hmm.
at the moment. I know for a fact, you know, Ministry of Healthcare, it's not an easy topic since the mental health scene has been evolving so rapidly. And so it will be a challenge for the Ministry of Health. And I think politicians to adequately respond to this issue that has affected not only, you know, kind of the English-speaking Klang Valley crowd, but more so isolated communities across the country that don't have access to the same kind of entertainment avenues that one would have in cities, but also with struggles with internet connection,
yeah.
And then it affects your education access and your work access. All those things will eventually downstream to mental health. And
mm-hmm.
so that's an important and very pressing issue for the years to come.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting also because, as you said, you know, in our Klang Valley sort of bubble, we have so much access to the mental health practitioners, right?
That's
right. Those other communities, so many of them have no access. I remember doing an interview last year, and this was about young children who were facing mental health issues. I mean, it's already starting at that age, right? It's really quite, something that really needs to be paid attention to. Another important topic, wealth distribution.
Yeah, so really touching on the question of affirmative action. And this is sort of, you know, kind of more of a temperature check, if anything, on a kind of 50-year discussion at hand, right? What we actually asked was, across a number of dimensions, such as scholarships, access to housing discounts, Amanah Saham, and all these various instruments for affirmative action and wealth distribution, we asked whether youth respondents were okay with it, you know, always in this affirmative action or privilege to be present for Bumiputras, always, sometimes, or never, and kind of in, on that scale. What we found was that, you know, for kind of unsurprising to an extent, Malay and Bumiputra youth answer would lean more heavily towards always providing these privileges kind of across the board, whereas Chinese respondents were okay with providing these privileges sometimes, okay, versus Indian respondents who responded or lean more heavily to never providing these affirmative action instruments. So, I mean, I think this is kind of a reproduction of kind of existing, you know, youth are not so much different from their adult peers in the sense that opinions on affirmative action are still very much racially split, and that's no surprise. But also, I think this is interesting because it demonstrates a degree of disagreement, right? The one that Chinese respondents were willing to, or were, you know, in agreement to give privileges sometimes. Perhaps it is the fact that Chinese socioeconomic mobility has been a lot higher, and then, you know, that would probably cause some degree of agreeability with affirmative action. Mm-hmm. But I think the question is for minority communities, like in Indian minorities, as well as, you know, Orang Asli minorities actually as well, how do these, what instruments are there for them?
Because we're talking about affirmative action as well, isn't it? So how, what is being done to help them?
That's right.
Clearly. From all of these findings, so we will have to wait for the third survey to be released. That's coming up end of this month, am I correct?
Hopefully by after Raya. After Raya.
Okay, all right. So, but based on all the things that you've just discussed with me, I suppose, what was most surprising to you? What kind of like took you by surprise?
Yeah, I think one is for sure, you know, just recounting, it's reproduced divisions. That although youth, you know, very clearly are perhaps moving in different directions than the previous generation, for many things, it's an inherited discussion, yeah, right? Of affirmative action, of how unemployment is being managed in the country. The second thing is it's about, you know, to do with the death penalty and as well as the penalty on drugs, right? So I think in my personal, you know, from observation that there are changing trends among youth where youth are less likely to be penalizing and they're more willing to be open to policy reforms in this regard, okay, right? So oftentimes when we field new policy ideas, youth are open to it. Mm-hmm. Youth are open to it. But the question is, you know, we only ask about whether or not they're willing to decrease punishment with drugs. But what we didn't ask, unfortunately, on our part, for example, in the news now, it's about medical marijuana. It's about the commercialization of ketum. Mm-hmm. And all these are, you know, very much, I think, no one would be imagined that we would be discussing this 10 years ago.
Yeah,
but these are up in front discussions within the Ministry of Health right now. Yeah. And that's exciting because I think it also signals that there is a changing trend of how we're dealing with this, what used to be taboo topics in society.
Mm-hmm. I think all of us remember in school, right? Those anti-Dada campaigns, right? It was like the devil itself, right? And what would you say is your main takeaway from the results so far?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's a need for greater re-examining. Mm-hmm. When we currently are assuming a lot of things about what youth want and what youth don't want, right? For example, I came in, you know, thinking that the drug question, youth would be very much still, you know, not penalizing. Okay. But in the end, you know, there's still some degree of resistance there. And that's all okay. I think there needs to be a greater re-examining into what exactly are they believing in terms of punishment as well as specific policy issues when you break it down. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And we spoke about, you know, the methodologies, and I think you also briefly mentioned some of the questions that you missed, right? But what would you say are some of the survey's limitations based on what you
sure. Yeah. Obviously, you know, with a survey like this that's so wide, we trade off volume for specificity.
Sure.
So there are some tensions, like I mentioned, the speech question, right? Youth are, you know, scared, but they want, you know, they're still okay with punishment. Why is that? Is it the case that they want punishment just not for them? or are they fearful of instruments being misused and abused by society, by, you know, those in power? So really resolving those tensions and explaining what we're observing is important. And I think this is a question or challenge for policymakers, right? To really interrogate why do youth have preferences in this particular way? And I think also for politicians and policymakers to really dig deep into this and really understand what exactly is it that youth want and formulate new ideas and policies. Because I think for a lot of these topics, some of them are new, but some of them are really old. There haven't been a lot of innovative ideas in the past 2 years. I mean, unsurprising given that we've, you know, been managing a pandemic. But I think now that we're slowly coming out of it and we're approaching the next general elections, it's, I think, at least for me personally as well, what are some of the fresh ideas and approaches to these policy topics, that's really something to see.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I guess, you know, my last question would be, what do you hope from all of this so far? And especially when the third part comes out, what do you hope will happen?
For sure. I think one is just a simple, more emphasis on democratic listening. Mm-hmm. If you've been down to the Johor elections, for example, sometimes politicians are, you know, using, you know, good campaigning where they are explaining what they're going to do for their constituency, what they're promising the people. But oftentimes campaigning doesn't, good level of campaigning doesn't happen. Oftentimes it's really either fear-mongering to the other side, or in our previous, another analysis for Malacca one, we found various cases of the race and religion card still being used. Mm-hmm. So for politicians to take the high road and emphasize democratic listening to the youth and reflect that in campaigning. The second one is not only just for politicians, but also policymakers, that, you know, civil servants in government, how will we be able to refine processes in getting public feedback for this, right? Mm-hmm. Where there are some things that are simply quite urgent. For example, in a previous survey release, we talked about rent control, and these are topics that are very agreed upon by youth that are currently, you know, in discussion by the Tenancy Agreement Act. Yeah. And that's something that's been quite slow within the policy process. So how do we perhaps speed it up, or what kind of urgent matters that youth need to be resolved now that policymakers need to put on a pedestal at the moment?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's very much directed to our policymakers, I would say.
Exactly, okay. Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jason, for joining me today. And of course, we'll get in touch when, you know, the part three of the results are out. And that's, you said, most likely after, right?
That's right.
Okay. But, you know, in the meantime, if folks would like to find out more, or they'd like more information about this survey, I mean, what can they do?
Yeah, for sure. You can go to undi100.org, and there you can find out more about the survey, as well as submit your own aspiration for Malaysia, and we would direct this at youth. If you're, you know, below 30 listening to this and you have something to voice out, we would highly encourage you to go to our Undi 100 website. And as well as you want to support our work, please feel free to go to giveasia.org and search up Architects of Diversity as well.
Okay, and Architects of Diversity is aodmalaysia.org.
Yes,
am I correct?
Right.
All right, well, thank you again for joining me today. I've been speaking to Jason Wee, co-founder of Architects of Diversity Malaysia. We were speaking about the Youth Aspiration Manifesto Survey. We were talking about the results from part one and part two of the results. Part three is coming out after Raya. We'll be in touch with Jason to find out more about that. But in the meantime, as Jason said, just head to undi100, that's numerical 100.org, to find out more. And if you miss any part of our conversation today, you can always download the podcast at bfm.my/learn, or you can find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.